My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
It is essential that our team learns to work with our new recruit, not against him.
I'm a geek, walking down the street.
Check the computer.
The mainframe computer.
I access the mainframe.
At the end of this day, one shall stand, one shall fall.
Time to find out.
Welcome to Basically a Geek Show. Here are your hosts, Mike and Jack.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 31 of Basically a Geek Show. I'm Mike. With me, as always, is Jack.
I may never sleep again.
And we're going to start right out of the gate with some superhero movie news. We talked a few shows ago about The Rock being cast as Shazam.
Shazam!
Turns out those reports were premature. He was cast in the Shazam movie, but apparently what happened was that they gave him the choice to either choose to play Shazam or his nemesis, Black Adam, and The Rock apparently chose to play Black Adam.
So, that's racist!
That's the character's name! Black Adam!
That should tell you all you need to know. That's racist! I say that partially in jest. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that no one has, you know, said, you know, either requested, demanded, or just proactively for the sake of PC, giving him a little bit of a name change.
Well, I think it helps that the character is Egyptian, not black.
Oh, true, but you know.
I mean, if it was a black guy named Black Adam, then I could see the issue, but.
Well, now it's gonna be a black Samoan.
Yeah, but he's like half Samoan, and like, it's that weird thing that Hollywood does, which is racist in and of itself, but they're like, well, he's some sort of brown, so he can pass for other brown, so The Rock can play an Egyptian. He played an Egyptian in The Scorpion King.
Well, him and then later on,
I didn't see any of the Scorpion King sequels because they all look like ass.
The Scorpion King itself wasn't all that great. I mean,
exactly.
That CGI of The Rock at the end looked like something out of a fucking PS2 game.
Yeah.
I've seen movies with less than half the budget that were better, but you know. Yeah, so, yeah, that's a thing, you know. I guess maybe he wanted to just play the bad guy, which The Rock doesn't normally play the bad guy, does he?
Not in his acting career, but I can tell you, as a wrestler, a lot of fans are of the opinion that The Rock's best work as a pro wrestler was when he played a heel. When he was the corporate sellout, when he was champion.
I know. This, strictly speaking, they're rewriting African American Adam to be a quote unquote corrupted anti-hero. I mean, I get it. So I guess like Batman on a bad day or something. I don't know.
That just tells me that they're doing it like they're just gonna try to give him some death beyond raw evil.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to give him some kind of tortured backstory or something. Oh, I bet you they're going to do the Kratos thing. I bet you he's going to be fucking Kratos.
Oh.
Which, I mean, that would be pretty cool because Kratos is badass, but.
Kratos,
you know.
Really?
Yeah, what's wrong with Kratos?
I don't have a problem with Kratos. It just seems like. Kratos just seems like what you'd get. If Michael Bay directed a movie about ancient mythology.
Exactly!
one of our listeners, Rams80, commented that The Rock would, not make a good Shazam because, Shazam himself is kind of a Boy Scout kind of character. I maintained that The Rock could have pulled that character off.
I think he could have.
Especially in light of some of the more recent movies I've seen, that if he had to, I think he could play that role. But I'm not going to lie, I think it's a better casting choice for Black Adam because, again, you know, just coming from the point of view of a wrestling fan, The Rock was always sort of, had more of a charismatic charm. Maybe when he wasn't necessarily being a bad guy as a wrestler, but when he was sort of riding the line between a good guy and a bad guy, The Rock was always kind of at his most entertaining then. And if they want to do a sort of anti-hero thing with him, this is a good casting choice, kind of a good direction to go in, because part of The Rock's problem when he was trying to be the bad guy was that he was so entertaining that fans ended up cheering him anyway. So then they just had to go make him a good guy. So if he can kind of bring that sort of performance to the role, and he can make a villain, if he can make the villain, Black Adam, likable, because of how charismatic he is as an actor.
Who knows? Maybe a DC movie is doing something right. I mean, they could actually have a new Loki on their hands. they could have their own Loki. And then, you know, in a few years, we'd be talking about Black Adam 4.
See, here's the thing, though, about that. If I put Loki and Black Adam in a room and they're going to fight, like, Loki's going to get his ass kicked because Loki's kind of a...
He's kind of a bitch.
He's kind of a peen. They very well could. And that comparison's kind of even further drawn out because Thor is very much like Shazam. And a lot of people wouldn't call Thor a Boy Scout, but kind of because of the setting that he comes from, Thor is very much defined by chivalrous ideals of honor and loyalty and that sort of thing. And so Thor's kind of more upstanding, whereas Loki's kind of got a bit of like the whole chaotic thing going on. And that's really the same dynamic we have here. Shazam, you could argue is more of a Boy Scout than Superman is. And then you've got Black Adam, which with the right actor and right writing could really be a kind of chaotic anti-hero. The formula is very much there. Like, the possibility to kind of replicate that is there. And because, okay, The Rock looks nothing like Tom Hiddleston, I don't think people – you'd get very many people crying – copycat on it just because the visual disparity between the two actors, unless they were just really blatant in how they wrote the script and that it was a blatant ripoff, which I don't think it would be. I think they're safe from that.
I like
the casting choice, although now I'm curious to see who they get to play Shazam, because a lot of the success of this is going to hinge on who they get to play Shazam and how that person's chemistry is with The Rock. So
yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll hear something about that pretty soon. Since they've cast a villain, I'm sure they had a short list.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be coming up pretty soon, I would imagine. But yeah, I mean, you know, this interests me enough to. I mean, Shazam himself, frankly, I don't have any patience for Mary Sue characters. I really don't. I've always been like, even when I was a kid. You know, I guess maybe G1 Optimus Prime would be the closest I ever came.
The thing about G1 Optimus Prime is, and what a lot of people forget about G1 Optimus Prime, is that G1 Optimus Prime had an edge to him. He wasn't a goody. I mean, he had a very strong moral code, and he stuck to that more times than he didn't.
You're nothing but junk, Megatron.
But yeah, no, Optimus Prime was not above trash talking. Optimus Prime was not above completely disrespecting his opponents. What did he say when that big game hunter captured Blitzwing and Astro Train? Was like,
what do you know? A booby trap that actually catches boobies.
Optimus Prime said boobies.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. When I rewatched G1 a couple years ago, I laughed my ass off. I'm like, oh, Optimus Prime said boobies.
So, you know.
Mature moments.
Indeed. So, you know, Optimus Prime, a lot of people say that he was kind of a bland character. I'd actually argue that Optimus Prime really only became bland in Prime when, you know, the writing for that was so lukewarm when it came to Prime, when it actually came to Optimus the character.
Yeah.
Optimus Prime in G1 had an edge to him. He, you know, he wasn't afraid to get down dirty. And then you have War for Cybertron. Okay, well, it's really funny. The War slash Fall for Cybertron Optimus and the Transformers Prime Optimus are two separate attempts to try to reinvent G1 Prime. I think the Transformers Prime show failed. They made him too boring. Yeah. It's like they only remembered the epicness from G1 Prime without remembering what gave the character some levity and some dimension.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Whereas I think the video game series, the Fall of Cybertron game series, really managed to update it in a better way. Optimus Prime is not boring in those games. He's got
The funny thing is, technically, I guess according to the canon, they're supposed to be the same guy.
They said that, but that's actually a really interesting train of bullshit.
See, yeah.
When High Moon Studios made the first War for Cybertron game, they originally imagined it as a prequel video game to the G1 cartoon. And Hasbro, at that same time, was working on the show Transformers Prime. So, High Moon makes this game, which is basically a love letter to G1. And then Hasbro's like, wait a minute, I smell marketing opportunities. And then they came up with this whole thing where it's like, the video games are in continuity with Prime, even though the characters look completely different.
Yeah.
Voice actors change. Peter Cullen's the only consistent voice actor. He plays Prime in the video games, he plays Prime in Prime. But Megatron, Ratchet, everyone else, any other characters that are shared between the two have completely different voice actors. The art style is completely different. The video games are more of an updated G1, whereas the TV show Prime is like an animated version of the Bay movies.
Yeah, more or less.
So, you know, they are technically the same character. It is technically the same continuity, but I'm throwing a red flag on that. Penalty on the play.
So yeah, we do have some other new movie news.
The Batmobile. We kind of got a brief glimpse of it when they released those shots, the first shots of Ben Affleck in the Bat suit. He was standing in front of the Batmobile, and we kind of got a glimpse of it. But for the first time, we were given a full-on depiction of the of what the Batmobile is going to be in this movie. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this.
God damn it.
That's not a very good sign.
It's quite obvious that it drew heavy inspiration from, you know, the Batmobile from the Nolan trilogy.
The Tumbler, yes.
Yeah. If you're going to emulate that in that trilogy in any way, why pick the Batmobile? Why waste your Nolan card on the Batmobile?
You couldn't waste your Nolan card on a good story.
Yeah, or, you know.
Or competent director.
Or dump trucks full of money brought up to Christian Bale's house until he signs a fucking contract.
Until he agrees to do it in your movie and not have it be terrible.
Right, or a suit that actually has fucking ears on it. I mean, it looks like
to me. Here's what it looks like. It looks to me like they're like, well, people really like the Nolan trilogy, and that had like the Tumbler, which was basically a giant tank. And
yeah, the Bat Tank,
like
pretty much.
The Bat Tank, pretty much. Yeah, and then someone else was like, well, but I think we should go for a more classic-looking Batmobile. And then those people got into a giant argument, and then suddenly, like, the guy in the art department was like, fine, I'll just draw it to make both of you happy.
Yeah, he drew it, threw it at them, and said, here, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, so...
And it looks like the Nolan, the Bat Tank, and the more classic Batmobile had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad look. You know, my frustration with it is, again, you know, you the one way in which you choose to emulate, you know, that trilogy, and this is what you use that on.
Mm-hmm.
No other real like design cues that I've seen of the bat suit. kind of harken back to the Nolan trilogy in any way.
No. The new bat suit that they're going to put Ben Affleck in looks – it's straight out of the comics with a few hints from the animated series. It's not Nolan-esque
at all. It is what it is. I don't particularly care for it. I don't think the combination of the two designs really works very well.
No, it's not, because the classic Batmobile design is very sleek, and the Nolan and I almost get the sense that when they were designing the Tumbler for the Nolan series, they made a conscious decision to get as far away from that as possible. So now you're taking two designs that have nothing in common, and you're smashing them up. And it kind of looks like a mess to me. It not only does it look visually like a mess, like it's trying to be two completely different things, but it looks flimsy.
On some other pictures I've seen, and as well as, you know, that kind of back this up from the picture you showed me, it looks like maybe it's going to have some capability where the wheels like fold under it. And it can be a boat or some shit, maybe a hovercraft.
Maybe. I'm just saying, like, it looks flimsy, like, because those back wheels are just sort of hanging there. Like, there's not a lot connect, and doesn't seem like there's a lot connecting those wheels to the actual, you know, Batmobile. So, like, if I'm the Joker, like, that's where I'm aiming the fucking bazooka.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be the Joker, because there can never be another Joker ever again, because Heath Ledger's the best actor ever.
They're actually going to bring the Joker into the Gotham TV show in season two of that show. So
that's different though from a movie appearance. This is like a younger thing, and so it's a way that they can quote unquote get away with it when there really shouldn't be a reason that they need to do it. They should just be like, well, it's fucking Batman. Here's the fucking Joker. Get over it.
Well, speaking of Batman villains, actually, and I know I'm taking us off the reservation. We have our topic list and we'll get back to it, but I just remembered something that I wanted to bring up because I knew you'd get a kick out of it.
Okay.
So, you know how we talked about the Season 3 trailer for Green Arrow, and that Season 3 for Green Arrow looked like a blatant ripoff of the plot of Batman Begins?
Yes.
Turns out that almost became exactly what happened when DC kind of said, we're going to use Ra's al Ghul for Arrow. Liam Neeson offered to reprise the role.
Nice.
I love Liam Neeson as Ra's al Ghul in the Nolan series, but think about this. Liam Neeson, that currency's devalued to the point where he's willing to do shows on the CW.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, you and I had joked about that.
Yeah.
That was our first thought. Well, you know, Liam Neeson's pretty free these days, as it would seem.
Yeah.
You know, call him up. I'm sure he'll do it. And as it turns out, he was calling them. Hey, guys.
And they turned him down.
Wow.
No, they said that they wanted to take the character of Ra's al Ghul in a different direction. So Liam Neeson just got shot down by the CW.
Wow.
Remember when him being in your movie was a big fucking deal?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I do. They got Liam
it
Neeson.
Wasn't that long ago. I mean, it was a simpler time, a better time, when Liam Neeson mattered and Kevin Costner didn't. And yeah. Things were better.
Yeah, no, like, when Batman Begins came out and it had Liam Neeson, it was like, shit, Liam Neeson's doing a Batman movie? This is going to be awesome. Hell, I've heard a lot of people say that Liam Neeson's one of the more tolerable things about Episode 1, Star Wars. So, you know, Liam Neeson, at one time, big fucking deal. Now he's being, you know, turned away by the CW network. That's sad. I'm sorry, Liam.
R.I.P. Liam Neeson's career.
I really liked some of your better movies. Okay, let's move on. Keeping with the villain theme, though, the new Doctor Doom costume has been leaked from the upcoming Fantastic Four movie that Fox is going to try to tie in with their X-Men series.
Oh, wow.
And I believe this is what you were referring to, Jack, when you said you're never going to sleep again.
Yes.
So My first thought is, can we really jump to conclusions here? Like, it's so bad, I don't want to jump to conclusions.
Let's get out the mat.
Okay. Okay. General thoughts.
I'm never going to sleep again. That is, okay, and I don't mean this in a good way. I do not mean this in a good way. Mm-hmm. That is the creepiest fucking thing I've ever seen. It looks like it was made either A, in a halfway house for, you know, reforming pedophiles and serial killers.
Where they make, they have them do, like, art projects?
Or, yeah, or B, like, if Damien from The Omen made a fucking Halloween costume for kindergarten.
Yeah, it kind of looks like, you know, you take, like, the serial killers and pedophiles in, like, the halfway house, you know, and you're like, sculpt me what your feelings look like.
Yeah. It looks horrible, and it looks creepy as fuck, and not, again, not in a good way, in a
I'll touch your penis
kind of a way. And it's just, my God. First off, fuck Fantastic Four. Can't fucking stand them. And this just gives me one more reason to not see and ignore this movie as much as I can.
Okay, first of all, Reed Richards is a fucking asshole.
Because
he takes his untrained family into space. And it's like, we're just going to fly you through, like, cosmic bullshit. Like, really? You didn't have any trained astronauts for this? But anyway. Yeah. I don't understand why movies have such a hard time with Doctor Doom's costume. In the first Fantastic Four series that they did, which got aborted after the second film because it was objectively terrible, it was sort of... They never really got that right either, because they made it look like he was wearing, like, the Doctor Doom mask looked fine in those movies, but they made his green cloak too big, and it kind of looked like he was in a muumuu. And now, I don't know what this is. Like, Doctor Doom is supposed to have, like, the metal parts of his costume are supposed to be smooth and armor-like. It's almost supposed to be, like, suit of armor-like.
Yeah.
And now they've just got him looking in, like, this scarred, really weird, creepily textured metal bodysuit. And the hood looks really creepy and, like, poofy in a weird way. Like, it's bigger than his head. Like, it's really disturbing. I understand the look they're going for. It's just a look I would not have used for Doctor Doom. And again, the reason why I don't want to jump to conclusions is, you see, it's against a green screen. Two things pop to mind. Either one, it's going to be touched up with CGI, and maybe it won't look so bad then. Or two, maybe this is Doctor Doom after he gets really fucked up, and we're looking at, like, a really damaged version of him. Those are the two things that I'm trying to tell myself to mitigate this.
I hope it's the second one, because if it's the first one, mm-hmm. you know, I already feel like that movies rely too much on CGI as it is. And here's the thing, like, you know, why make a suit that needs to be touched up with CGI when you could just make a suit that doesn't look like ass to begin with?
Well, that's something, that's a question that the creators of the Green Lantern movie never asked themselves.
You know, I actually kind of like that movie.
That suit was terrible.
I mean, you know, yeah, whatever.
I maintain that that movie's biggest problem was that the editing was fucking atrocious.
But, I mean, it wasn't the best thing I ever seen, but it didn't, like, offend me or anything.
Oh, apparently, like, I don't know where that movie even stands, if they're going to consider that, or if Ryan Reynolds is going to go do, like, Deadpool instead, but...
Let's hope for Deadpool. Deadpool, let's do it!
But yeah, this Doctor Doom costume not working for me at all. Like, again, hopefully this isn't going to be indicative of what he looks like in the movie. Maybe this is just one scene out of context that we're looking at, but this makes the Wonder Woman costume from Batman v Superman look just downright inspired.
Oh, just God damn it.
Let's move on then before you die. The Angry Video Game Nerd. Angry Video Game Nerd's kind of a big deal when it comes to internet media. A lot of these internet reviewers who you see kind of owe their careers to the Angry Video Game Nerd. He was really one of, if not the first, to kind of popularize the angry reviewing style of movies and video games. And remains one of the more popular ones. So I have to ask, you've seen this movie. What did you think of it? The Angry Video Game Nerd did have his own movie. Jack, you've seen it. What did you think?
It was really good, actually. Mm. You know, it had a very small budget, small budget by, you know, movie standards, $325,000.
Mm-hmm.
And he really made the most of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in terms of the special effects, this movie tries to do a lot of different things. It's a satire, it's a sci-fi movie, it's, you know, just flat out comedic. It's a kaiju flick, it's, you know, it's a sci-fi flick, and it does all of these things good. In the sense that it weaves them all together fairly seamlessly. One shot you'll see CGI. One shot you'll see a guy in a suit stomping a city. One scene you'll see, you know, a model tank rolling off of a cliff, and you know it's fake. You know it's obviously a model tank. But it does it deliberately. It does all these things. Anything that this movie, when you look at it, say, oh, well, that's obviously fake. Well, yeah, that's kind of the point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been called, you know, by some is overly self-indulgent. And that's what's good about it, because it's a fan movie. It was paid for by the fans through a Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave the fans what we wanted. And, you know, it's one of those things, you're either going to get it or you don't. I think that even if you're not a fan of the Angry Video Game Nerd, that you can sit and watch this movie. And as long as you have a liking of absurdly goofy cult movies, I think you'll like it.
Okay.
It basically, when he first started doing these movies, this YouTube series back in 2008, you know, where he was just, you know, reviewing these retro games and ranting and raving and drinking. If I had only known about this, I could have done it, because I've been doing that for fucking years.
Just before
even started. Right, exactly. But, you know. And he's always gotten these requests, you know, do E.T., do E.T., which a sentence or two of backstory on that, you know, E.T. for the Atari 2600 said to be the worst game ever made. They dumped them all in a landfill, blah, blah, blah.
Almost killed video games.
Yeah, almost tanked an entire industry, you know. And so this is – when he started getting so many requests for this, he's like, you know, I want to do this, but this is more than one episode can handle. And so, you know, he started kind of working on a script for it. And of course, you know, the nerd, James Rolfe, he was a short filmmaker first and the nerd second for so long, because he made many things that predated the nerd, and he's done other things since then as well. You know, little short films and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so he decided that this would be his feature film. And, you know, this would be the one. And it shows, I mean, it shows how much he put into it, how much everyone put into it that was involved. The casting's actually pretty good. I mean, you got, better acting than in a lot of Hollywood features, to be honest with you. I think largely because everyone involved with it, you can tell they're there because they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it is good. It's pretty damn good. You can actually rent it or purchase it on Vimeo right now. And it is coming out on, I think, DVD and Blu-ray. He said sometime this holiday season, December at the latest, is what he's aiming for. Mm. He actually premiered it at the Chinese Theater in Hollywood.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. And, it does so many different things, but it does them all well. The movie's got a great atmosphere, great pacing, great editing. I really liked it. I really did.
Good to hear. My biggest complaint, because I haven't seen the movie, but my biggest fear kind of going into this is that the angry video game nerd character might wear thin over the length of a feature-length film. I mean, it works in the small doses that are his reviews, but is it maybe too much over the length of a movie?
I don't see how that could ever wear thin, but for the sake of someone for whom it could, I would say no, because again, it's the editing and the way the plot's done. And you see more of he doesn't just do the same thing that he does in the films. He does that and then more, and it's the more that helps dilute what you've already seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's not 2 hours of him, you know, pouring fake shit over games. It's, you know, you see him at his job, you see him, you know, doing other things, interacting with other people outside of what you see on YouTube, which is just, you know, the nerd cave, basically. So you see him out in the environment and interacting with others, and it adds more dimension to that character than what you've seen on YouTube. So no, it wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. It seems, from what you're telling me, it's very self-aware and indulgent, but in a good way.
Yes.
And I'm really not opposed to that sort of thing. I mean, at the end of the day, sparkling champagne is nice, but you can't have that every night, and sometimes you need to take a shot of whiskey to cleanse the palate.
Yeah, I've actually gotten to where I prefer movies that are absurd and self-indulgent. Just because, I mean, everything tries to be so fucking polished and so perfect these days. And it's gotten to the point to where they almost become self-parodies. At least it's great to see movies that know it and don't try.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you know.
No. I get that. I get that. Well, here's hoping. I enjoy it when I finally get around to seeing it. It should. I've always enjoyed the nerd, and given his love for kaiju films, I'm especially interested to see how that plays into it. Because I did not know that kaiju would be a part of the plot. I know the basic plot of it, but I didn't think it would be something that. I didn't think it would include kaiju. So the fact that that's in there and the fact that I know that he's a kaiju fan, I'm interested to see how he does it, how that sort of plays. I'm looking forward to it.
So. He does it better than Roelick Emmerich did.
No, you know, that's not set our sights too low.
Yeah, true.
moving on. We're going to take a left turn. And we're going to talk about some more Masterpiece Transformers. We talked a bit about we talked a lot about Masterpiece Star Saber last week, and we touched a bit on Masterpiece Exhaust. Masterpiece Exhaust being a repaint of a new head of Masterpiece Wheeljack. And today we're actually going to talk a bit about Masterpiece Wheeljack because we've got in-hand pictures of the figure. And I particularly wanted to bring this one up because, damn it, I know you're a big Wheeljack fan, and I want to know what you think about this.
I have nothing bad to say about it.
Really?
No. I mean, it's obviously Wheeljack. Mm-hmm. I don't see anything there that I could possibly complain about.
Indeed. I mean, this is sort of the whole Masterpiece thing. It almost seems like it's as perfect a toy as you could make out of G1 cartoon Wheeljack. while still making him a figure that can realistically transform into a car.
Right. I mean, they again, this goes back to what we were saying about Star Saber last week. It takes the G1 design.
Mm-hmm.
It improves on it in the sense that it makes it like the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't try to make it like the original toy, which the original Wheeljack toy wasn't, you know, far from the worst offender for, you know, crappy G1 toys that looks nothing like their on-screen counterparts. Mm-hmm. Looking at you, Ironhide. But still, it still needed a little bit of an update, and that's what it got, a little bit of an update, and they did it right.
I mean, we've actually been spoiled for really good updates of Wheeljack. We got the Generations Wheeljack.
Yeah.
Which, I guess in a lot of ways, is sort of the budget version of this. It's the Wheeljack, it's the G1 Wheeljack you buy if you don't want to pay Masterpiece prices.
Yeah.
Then we got the Transformers Prime Wheeljack, which obviously was more in line with the Prime aesthetic, but it very heavily drew on G1 Wheeljack. So, even if the character kind of did his own thing, the Prime Wheeljack really wasn't G1 Wheeljack character-wise, but design-wise, he drew heavily on it. And I know you've got Prime Wheeljack.
Yes.
And I've got Generations Wheeljack. And, you know, you look at those two figures, they're both very good. They both draw heavily on G1 Wheeljack. Both fantastic figures, and you figure, you know, if you're a Wheeljack fan, well, between these two, I'm set. I don't have to spend any more money. And then they come out with this.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, do I like the figure? Yes, I really do. And because of what you just said, you know, we've had some good versions of Wheeljack already in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anything really compelling me to get this.
Yeah, that is the downside. Masterpieces, and you know, they have, since they started doing the classic Autobot cars, they've started making them smaller, and that's brought the price down. So, you know, Masterpiece Wheeljack isn't going to be as expensive as, say, Masterpiece Star Saber or Masterpiece Optimus Prime. But it's still going to be pricey for what it is.
Yeah.
And that price, especially when you consider that these things won't be in big box retail, the only way you can get this if you live in North America would be to order online. And that involves shipping, and that involves middle party markups.
Right.
Middleman markups.
And there's really nothing here. I mean, it's a good figure. I don't see anything that's so good about it versus what I already have to compel me to pay that kind of price for it.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. The mass retail Wheeljacks that we've gotten over the past couple of years have really kind of scratched that itch. And I look at this, I say, this is probably better than both of them in terms of capturing the spirit of G1 Wheeljack, but damn it, what I've got is pretty good, is good enough, and I didn't have to pay $80 plus shipping for it. So
now, I mean, if we could get Ironhide. For fuck's sake.
They've got to do Masterpiece Ironhide at some point.
His face was a sticker, Mike. His face was a sticker with a fucking smiley face on it.
I know, it's so absurd.
A fucking smiley face.
That toy's so absurd.
That is the toy that Shattered Christmases from the 80s were made of. It happened to me, sir. It happened to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck that... Well, I know exactly what happened, but, like, I understand why it was the way it was, but damn it. And Hasbro, I don't know what it is, but, like, there seems to be some mental block going on at Hasbro where, like, a good Wheeljack toy is impossible because they made Wheeljack. Ironhide. They made a Generations Ironhide.
I don't really care for it.
It sucked. I mean, Ironhide's simple. He's a boxy van who turns into a boxy robot. Why are we having trouble with this? Yeah, but again, kind of steering us off the reservation because this is kind of news that came up as we were recording. Even more pictures of Masterpiece Star Saber have been released, and I think after seeing it, you might want to revise your opinion, because these new pictures make him seem much better than the previous ones.
Yeah, lay it on me.
So these are the newest pictures of Masterpiece Star Saber.
Well, let's take a gander here. I need something to purge my mind of Dr. Doom.
And in my opinion, you know, that kind of...
Okay. Well, then what the fuck was that they showed the other day? Just a prototype?
No, I think it was probably a combination of a prototype and just being posed poorly. Because the thing about Transformers toy shoots is that...
They don't know how to transform their own toys when they photograph them.
Well, yeah, because, like, the department that does, like, PR isn't the part of the company that designs the toys. So you send the toy down to the photographer to be shot, to be put in promotional items, and he's like, how do I do Transformers?
Well, here's a fucking thought. Send a fucking intern down there with basic motor skills and say, hey, this is how you fucking do it.
But these new pictures, he seems much sleeker.
Yeah, no, this is good. Yeah, no, I totally eat what I said last week, because this is...
He seems sleeker. They've got the red pods on the shoulders, which actually go a long way to break up the monotonous white. I don't know. Like, I see this, I see, you know, this actually looks pretty good.
Yeah, no, I'm down with this. I love that sword. That sword's fucking badass.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see alt mode here.
Well, you know, the sword is the thing. I mean, even before he became a bad guy, Star Saber's whole... Well, it's weird. Star Saber's gone through a weird character thing. Because in G1, in the Japanese G1 show where he was introduced, he was... basically a righteous, upstanding Autobot paladin. And then in Energon, when they decided to bring the character back, he was a whiny prison guard.
Yeah.
And then they brought him back in IDW, only now he's an evil paladin. So, you know, Star Saber's gone through kind of an emotional roller coaster there, as far as his characterization goes. If you've been following the character since, you know, his earliest days of the Japanese G1 shows, then you're like, I don't know who the fuck he is anymore. But anyway, sir, I've got a link to his alt mode.
Oh, okay, cool.
There it is.
Let's take a look at this. Durg-durg-durg-durg-durg. Waiting. Yeah.
I mean, it's a boxy 80s spaceship, which is what he was.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's unoffensive. It's pretty cool. I like it, you know.
Indeed. My only concern here is, again, Masterpiece prices, and I keep thinking, is this really what I want? Like, do I want to pay? I want an updated Star Saber that's actually good, but do I want to pay Masterpiece prices for him? And I don't know if I do. And I really hope that at some point, you know, Hasbro, with their newfound appreciation for the IDW designs, takes IDW Star Saber and makes him a thing. I really want a good Star Saber toy, and this looks to be that. But, again, that price is going to be really inhibitive.
You know, okay, I know the origins of this was that Takara did a fan vote.
Yes.
And this is what the fans wanted, and understandably so. There's been a drought for, you know, Star Saber. But you would think, like, Hasbro, not Takara, Hasbro, would use Generations as kind of like a test market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put things out and do something like
this.
Right, exactly.
And then if the Generations version sells, that means there's probably going to be a market for the Masterpiece version.
Right, right.
Well, you know, I've kind of come around to your theory that they've been using the third party almost as an unofficial product testing.
Yeah,
let them waste the R&D on, you know, classics Roadbuster, and if it sells, then we'll make our own.
I mean, I might be a crazy conspiracy theorist, but even I come across one that's right every now and then.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that we're getting combiners so soon after the glut of third-party combiners really sort of makes that seem more like a realistic proposition in my mind. I know a lot of people were deriding it. A lot of people were like, if you understand the development of toy cycles, there's no way that they're responding to third parties. Well, no, because we've seen that 2-year development cycle on toys has been not as steadfast as a lot of people thought. I mean, Windblade was a fan-voted character, and they designed her toy in around a year.
Yeah, they got that shit out with a quickness.
And
so they can do it when they want to.
Exactly. And so, you know, just between Roadbuster and Springer, between Whirl and the combiners, I'm fully on board. Hasbro is looking, they're paying attention to what the third party's doing, and if they see that there's a market for something the third party's doing, then they are more than willing to let the third party, you know, eat the cost as market research for them to come in. And you know what? That's smart of them to do. That's smart of them. I don't blame them. I'm not going to get indignant about third parties. I'm really not. A lot of people go like it's theft of intellectual property, and it is.
It is, but
in a lot of cases, I don't know. It's one of those cases where it is, but at the same time, it's not. They're not blatant knockoffs either. It's wholly original engineering. Sometimes very high end engineering.
Yeah, they're filling a niche that Hasbro does not. They're not going after Hasbro's bread and butter on this. They're not, you know, these third party toys, the higher end ones, you know, they're not going for, you know, the 10-year-old boy demographic. They're going for the collector demographic and offering things that we cannot get from Hasbro.
And for example, a lot of stuff, for example, is only usable if you buy official Hasbro products. For the thing that comes to mind, the thing that really kicked off the third-party scene was the City Commander. Classics Optimus Prime, the one that you have, we both agree is a great toy, right?
Yeah.
When it was first released in 2006, they had a white and blue version that was Classics Ultra Magnus. It was just a white and blue version of that toy. But then Fans Project, one of the big third-party companies, came out with an add-on set which you could attach pieces to it.
Right.
And it turned into Ultra Magnus. And again, the moral outrage there is much less, in my opinion, because in order to use that third-party product, you had to buy the official Hasbro figure. And a lot of these third-party figures kind of operate the same way. Battle Tanker is another trailer add-on. Basically, there are trailer add-ons for every version of Optimus Prime / Ultra Magnus out there. There have been combiner add-ons where you take an official Hasbro combiner group, and then you just make some third-party limbs that you switch out, and you need the official Hasbro product to use the full thing. So, I mean, and then you do have entirely independent third-party toys, which don't require you to buy Hasbro product, but at the same time, I don't know, I can't find myself to be outraged by it. I mean, certainly if Hasbro came down hard on them and really sicked the legal team after them and took them down, you know, collective limb. There are multiple companies at play here, a lot of whom don't even really talk to each other. But if Hasbro were to really go after the third-party scene, I wouldn't be outraged, because I'd be like, you know what, they're within their right to do that with their own IP, but at the same time, I'm not going to get morally outraged at the concept of third party either.
Yeah, that's pretty much my stance on it too. I mean, I don't think Hasbro actually can shut down some of these because they operate in China.
That's been that's been what's saving them for so long, is that legally Hasbro can't get to them. But I've heard people say that Hasbro is considering going after, like, retailers, like, going to online retailers, like Big Bad Toy Store. And
yeah.
saying, like, if you sell third-party stuff, you don't get official Hasbro product, and that would be a way to sort of maybe cut it off. I don't know.
I see, the thing is, I kind of question whether how effective that would be. Mm. I could see, one of these stores that does sell these third-party products saying, well, most others are going to say, yeah, no, we'll stop, which means that if I tell Hasbro to fuck off, they'll have to come to me. So, yeah, fuck off, Hasbro. And then you'll see, you know, the prices will probably go up on the third-party stuff even higher than they already are in some cases. But you would see places capitalizing on it and saying, yeah, no, we won't carry Hasbro. We'll carry a third-party because they can go after the resellers all they want. But as long as the demand is there, which it obviously is, it's going to keep happening mm-hmm. until there's no demand for it.
Indeed. 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 And, you know what, I think that the current status quo is probably going to be maintained. Third-party companies' status, you know, they're operating out of China. I think we'll continue to save them until there's a drastic change in how China decides to pursue intellectual property laws, which I don't see changing anytime soon. So I see the sort of status quo is remaining the same, and I think it kind of works to everyone's benefit, so I don't think Hasbro's too worried about taking it down. But, you know, not just sort of, they get an unofficial means to sort of test ideas out by having them sort of take the risk on a lot of these things.
Yeah.
And third party benefits from the fact that Hasbro continues to provide a brand that they can sort of leech off of. So
yeah, I mean, you know, I think that they are in fact, you know, using these guys to test market for anything risky or potentially high dollar that Hasbro would have to do.
Like writers.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I see it all in that scenario, if my theory is correct and it's more of a symbiotic relationship mm-hmm. or simply one where Hasbro says, well, we can't be ours to do anything about it, so we may as well get some good out of it.
Indeed. Indeed. We're going to move on to another installment of the bad movie, Public Defender.
Indeed.
So, Jack, what do we have this time?
This one is actually a listener request from a few months ago
mm-hmm.
That we just hadn't gotten around to yet. Howard the Duck.
Yeah, ooh.
A movie that is definitely not the worst movie that George Lucas has ever made. I'm going to put that out there right now, and I think I'll get a good bit of agreement on that one statement alone. It is not the worst thing George Lucas has ever made. I'm just saying.
I see. At least the Star Wars prequels had cool fight scenes.
Well, you know.
All right, so let's get down to brass tacks on this one. Howard the Duck. This is a movie. Well, in a lot of ways, people say that this actually kind of spurred the development of Pixar. Because this movie was so bad that Lucas sold the animation wing of Lucasfilm off to Apple, and that became Pixar.
See, though, now keep in mind, this movie was made in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
Bad meant good back then.
It did not. Not always. Bad was bad.
What? No, bad was bogus.
Really?
Yes. I was there, sir.
Okay.
We were all high on coke.
I guess. Okay. So I'm going to start us off from the beginning of the movie. where Howard the Duck lives in a world that is pretty much our world, except everyone is a duck. And right off the bat, this movie starts irritating me because of all the goddamn puns. Everything in this world, in this duck world, is a fucking pun on crap that, you know, it's a pun on the crap that exists in our world, only it's duck themed. And I don't know, that whole thing just it's just really irritating because there's a scene where he walks into his apartment and he's got like a duck Indiana Jones poster. He's got like a duck version of Playboy, which is really disturbing. I thought this was supposed to be a movie for kids, damn it. Now you're making them think about duck sex.
Duck sex.
I don't know. It just seems like it's just a really bad start to your movie when I'm irritated by the protagonist's home setting.
I think you're too easily irritated, frankly.
Probably.
Okay. Now, is their world just a pun of ours, or is ours a pun of theirs?
Bring it back, M. Night Shyamalan.
I'm just saying. Maybe we've been dead the whole time.
And it was the trees the whole time?
It was the trees. The happening.
I don't know. And like the whole thing is he gets sucked into our universe kind of through the it's really kind of a piss poor way to explain how he's sucked, because it actually shows him literally being sucked through space. You'd think that'd kill him.
Well, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. Movies. Here's my thing with this movie. Again, I judge a movie based on one criteria.
Mm-hmm.
When I watch it, do I have a good time?
Mm-hmm.
And with Howard the Duck, the answer was yes. You're right. It is a parody of itself in a lot of ways. It is self-referential. It is also, as we discussed earlier with the AVGN film, it is aware of itself. And as also I said earlier, those are things that often appeal to me. Now, when this movie was new in the theaters, you know, back in the day, I did not see it. I didn't see it until, well, within the last probably 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked it.
Now, I'm curious, how do you defend the duck tits? That being that there is a scene when Howard the Duck is being sucked out of his apartment through the vacuum of space. He crashes through the wall of someone's bathroom, of one of his neighbor's bathrooms, and there is a female duck puppet in a bathtub, and you see full-on duck tits.
First off, I'm going to say, they had to find a very special person to make that puppet.
Yes, they did.
I didn't, you know, I thought it was funny in a lewd sort of way. And I think maybe that's why this movie kind of got the rap that it did. I mean, this is the 80s. This is the era of Ronald Reagan. I miss voting for that man. Even though we were coked out of our minds all the time, it was still, compared to now, a much more – there were lines that weren't that you just didn't cross back then that you could do now. You could do that now, I think, and you'd have people fapping to it, because now it would be super over-sexualized and tits would be 5 times bigger other shit.
Let's roll it back to the fact that biologically birds do not have breasts.
Well, neither do reptiles, but in a lot of sci-fi universes, reptilian women have fucking boobs too. I mean,
and that is something in and of itself that we should get to at some point. But I'm not even gonna address that because it's sci-fi. So you know, sci-fi can be whatever you want it to be. So
well,
whatever.
This is sci-fi.
No. What I'm getting to is that Howard the Duck, and I think the whole duck tit scene really sort of exemplifies, it sort of condenses everything that's wrong with this movie into one really freaky scene with a really freaky puppet, is that this movie doesn't know what it wants to be. The Howard the Duck comics were actually really adult-themed and they had a lot of adult stories. But at the same time, you're making a movie about a walking duck, about like this walking, talking duck. In the 1980s, you know, what did that mean? That meant Donald the Duck, or it meant Daffy the Duck. It meant a kid's cartoon character, essentially. So you're making this movie with this walking, talking duck character. And so the studio's going, oh, well, it's going to be for kids. It's going to be like one of those movies with like the cute little cuddly animal sidekick who the kids love. It'll, you know, it's for the children. But at the same time, you know, there's the source material, which is more adult. And so this movie tries to play it both ways, right? Like, and this duck tit scene encapsulates that perfectly, because it is a duck puppet that in most ways looks like it's something that you might even see on like the Muppet Show or something like that, but it's cut tits. So.
Oh my God. That would have been so great if like when he'd gone through the fucking wall and seen her, he would have just gone, Manamana.
Oh God.
That would have been awesome.
But you get what I'm saying though, right? Like it's trying to be both adult and appeal to the kids at the same time, and it doesn't really know what it wants to be, and so it's just kind of floundering.
Basically, I mean, you're in a way though, you're almost kind of agreeing with me in some way, in the sense that my whole thing is I'm saying this was a movie that was made when people weren't ready for this kind of thing to be on their movie screen. Mm-hmm. And there probably was over, you know, corporate involvement. Hey, kids and da, da, da. And maybe they didn't know. Maybe Lucas didn't quite know how to do this, because he knew, okay, this movie is a rated R flick, would not have, it wouldn't fly. No pun intended. Mm-hmm. So they did with it what they could, and it even with that, it's still very standout, very, very much an oddball movie for its time. And now, I mean, and I do hope that they do a reboot of this. I would love to see it, because now they
pop up at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and now they could do this now, and they could probably make it rated R, and it not be a problem.
They wouldn't make it rated R.
Because
it is, at the end of the day, it is Marvel, and Marvel is family entertainment now, so there's no way Marvel is doing anything that's rated R.
But you know, I'm just saying theoretically it could be done, and mm-hmm. people really wouldn't have the same reaction to it. And I think that's kind of what's colored this movie over time, is that weird combination that resulted from this movie trying to go its own route, trying to be something that was very different at the time. And I think it's gotten that reputation that it isn't entirely deserved. Is this a cinematic masterpiece? No, it's not. But when I watch it, I have fun. I think it's funny. I dig the cheap humor. I dig the parody of itself. I dig the self-referencing kind of thing.
Objection!
What?
Objection. Any movie that features, sexual attraction between a duck and a human being deserves any scorn that is heaped upon it.
I'm going to say no, because if you say that, then Captain Kirk, now he never fucked a duck, but that's because he never had a duck chick in Star Trek. Okay.
Counterfactual, you're assuming.
Look at Captain Kirk's background. Okay. I'm just saying, if it moves, he will dock in its starbase. He will put his shuttlecraft in the port and he will beam several million aboard. I'm just saying. And if this duck chick existed in the Star Trek universe, if they had put it in the Star Trek universe, Captain Kirk would have been all over that. If it's we're not talking, you know, some hillbilly here, one of my neighbors, getting drunk and, you know, going over to a duck and, you know, giving it a good plow. We're talking about an alien race, a sentient being, and with
avian
the ability
based. Avian based,
an avian based sentient life form capable of making its own decisions, as is its mate, be they human or otherwise. And, you know, it was consensual sex. I don't categorize that as bestiality. I do not put it in the same category as the brony thing either, because that is intended for 7-year-old girls, and so that's my line on that. If it's a sentient base, if the overarching content is intended, is not overtly intended for children, which by this scene existing, it is not overtly intended for children. It is put in the film in a way that had I gone to see this when I was a kid, I wouldn't have thought anything about it. I wouldn't have gotten what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and that's something that I think a lot of movies and parents and everything get kind of wrong. It's like, you know, remembering back when I was that age, when I would see something sexually explicit, I didn't think anything of it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think anything good or bad. It's just another scene. And in most cases, I was just bored or irritated that something wasn't blowing up or something cool wasn't happening. And, you know, I don't think that made me the sexual deviant that I am. I think, you know, I don't think I had any part in that. That was completely other shit. So, you know, I don't see anything wrong with it. It's presented in a manner that's, I won't say tasteful. I'll say not overtly offensive. And I don't have an issue with it. I still think the movie's funny.
I don't know. It just seems – it seems weird, and not in a good way. Like, the main plot – like, the same device that brings – Howard to our universe or planet, it's really not clear. Also, kind of brings some other entity, and it possesses a scientist, and the plot just seems. And then there's a subplot where the duck's love interest is like part of a band who's being taken advantage of by their manager. So then Howard has to try to get them out of the like, what the fuck is going on?
Well, now, the reason for that is simple. The 80s.
Yes, I get that, but, like, what the fuck's going on? We've got this movie about this, like, dimension-hopping space duck, and he's seducing a human chick, and then that's weird, and now we've got, like, this fucking after-school special plot where they have to get rid of the evil band manager. There's an alien duck! Why are we focusing on mundane shit?
Because the 80s. If they had not had that in there and they would have just had, you know, more scenes of him, you know, flirting with the human chick, then you'd be sitting here complaining about that.
Yes, I would, because
so
it offends God's creation. That's
There are far worse things in this world, sir, than human duck sex.
Not much. Not very many things.
And, you know, it's that mindset that's why ISIS hates our freedom. Now, stop defending ISIS. God damn it, man.
I don't know, man. It's just fucking
awesome.
It's Howard the Duck. It's this weird movie that doesn't know if it wants to be for kids or adults. It's got a plot that, you know, we divert from so we can focus on some generic 80s thing with, like, band managers and crap. I don't know. This movie really doesn't know what to be. It's less a movie and it's more just, you know, a bunch of random things loosely strung together that involve this duck. I mean,
I didn't take that from it. I didn't get that feeling from it.
No, I don't know
what to tell you. I just didn't.
To me, the plots are just so disconnected, though, because you've got like this. First, you've got the fish out of water thing when Howard first shows up.
Is he a duck, sir, or is he a fish? Make up your mind.
But we do that for a while. And then we get into this whole manager, band manager storyline, which I don't know why it's there, aside for, like, it's the 80s, and it was either that or he had to save some kid's recreational center from a real estate developer.
Oh, no, that's more 90s.
Either way. And then there's that, and then after that, we jump into this plot where this alien entity has possessed this body of the scientist who's going to open a gateway to other dimensions. And, like, it just seems like we're zigzagging all over the place. Like, I understand that you're going to have a B plot. I understand that the narrative is going to take more than one direction, but we just seem to be jumping from point A to point. It's not point A to point B. It's point A to point Z.
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 Okay.
I honestly, in this particular case, after having watched them, you know, when I watched the movie, I didn't get that feeling from it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't feel any disconnect in the plot. I mean, maybe this is movies to watch while drunk, but I didn't get that. I just thought it was a funny movie about a duck who liked tits. and, you know, I thought the whole parallel world/universe thing, and, you know, you saying that the movie doesn't seem to know whether it's a parallel universe that the ducks are on or another planet that the ducks are on. Well, you know what, sir? Scientists don't know either.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that about Howard the Duck. I'm talking about the various incarnations of the multiverse theory. And it's actually theorized that if the universe is in fact infinite, that with enough planets, eventually any variation of our world will exist in this same universe. So it could be just another planet.
Now we're getting into topics that I do not feel I am qualified to weigh in on.
Well, I am, sir, because I watched the History Channel. I did.
Back before it just became
the Pawn Stars Channel.
The Pawn Star Channel. I saw that they have some new pawn-related show coming out.
I'm sure they do. But yeah,
like, it's not Pawn Stars, but it's like pawn-based.
But anyways, I mean, you know, I didn't see anything. I didn't see anything worse about this movie than many others that I've seen. It's certainly not the worst George Lucas film that's out there. And it, in terms of overall movies of its type, I would actually say it's definitely one of the better ones. Simply because it does things that you didn't do back then. It does things that haven't been done since. And you may say, well, there's a reason for that. But I would say, well, no, I watched it. I seen what it was doing. And I didn't see anything wrong with it. From a storytelling standpoint, you know, do I particularly care about the band manager and all this other shit? No, I really don't. But then again, the 80s and whatever, and that was the thing then, kind of, in a lot of shit like that. So, you know, it's not a cinematic masterpiece, but I'd much rather watch that than Citizen Kane or the fucking Godfather. Mm-hmm. Two of the most overrated pieces of bloated garbage ever. So, you know.
I kind of find it.
You are right on one thing, though. It is weird.
It's weird.
Yes. It is weird. And to me, though, that's a good thing. I like weird, obviously. Weird because everything else is so non-weird that when you see something that is truly weird, that's not just like creepy, scary, like Doctor Doom's costume weird, that I like it.
I don't know. I kind of see it, and I see this really weird movie,
And I feel just a certain disconnect because of its weirdness. It doesn't seem weird in a good way to me.
Well, maybe you're not weird enough.
Maybe I'm not. Maybe I am not. But let us move on to some World of Warcraft news. We didn't have much to talk about last week, but this week... And speaking of which, again, sorry. But back to the Batman Final Defender. Of course, it's up to listeners to decide who won. Is Howard the Duck the abomination it is rightfully made out to be, or has Jack defended it? But let's move on to WoW.
And before you state your opinion on whether or not my defense of this movie is valid, I want you to hear Jar Jar's voice in your head. I want you to hear him talking to you. That is all.
All right, so on to WoW. The reason why we're talking about this now is, Jack, you got into the Warlords of Draenor beta.
I did indeed, yes, finally.
Now, I'm not one for beta. I don't know. I just like, I'm like, when the game comes out, it comes out. I'll enjoy it then. I honestly don't get the appeal behind playing what is essentially going to be a half-finished version of the game. I'm going to get later. But I have come to accept that as far, within the gaming community, I'm weird like that. I am very much in the minority. I mean, hell, you had people paying hundreds of dollars for Hearthstone beta keys. And, you know, that's a goddamn card game. So,
yeah.
Obviously, I'm the one with the problem here. But that
does... Well, at least you finally admitted on one thing.
But just because I have really no interest in getting into the beta doesn't mean that I won't mine you for information about the beta, sir.
Which is part of the reason why I got into the beta. Mm. For me, and I'll go ahead and address why I like to get into the WoW betas. I like to kind of see what's going on. I like to kind of see, because there's always all this speculation about the new features and how they're being implemented. And... all this other shit, when at the end of the day, I mean, no matter what anyone else says, you're either going to like something or you're not. And I like to kind of go in there and see for myself what I'm going to think of something. Mm-hmm. And I don't really play – honestly, I don't play that much of the content because even though I'm very anti-spoiler warning, I really don't care about that kind of thing, and I think – that when people bitch about it, makes them look like little 5-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to something like, wow, that's a heavy, heavy time investment, I don't want to burn myself out on it premature. I don't care about plot spoilers or things like that, but I don't want to feel like I've already invested 500 hours in a game when it's just released.
Yes. That's been another thing about mine.
And so I do avoid that. I go in, I test out the content, I get an overall feel for what's going on, and kind of make my decision on how I'm going to feel about the expansion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my thing on that.
Okay,
now,
so
ask away.
Okay, my first question is, honestly, in my opinion, I thought Mists of Pandaria was the apex of Blizzard making questing in WoW seem fun and not tedious. Does that carry over to Draenor? Is the story as engaging? Will I feel engaged by the quests in Draenor, or will I just feel like I'm doing someone's bitch work?
Well, now, the thing is, even in Pandaria, sometimes there were quests where you felt like you were just someone's bitch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think that's ever going to completely go away because that feeling is very subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like the grindy Murloc I quest because they're simple and they don't really have to think much and all this other shit. To answer your question more directly though, based on what I have seen, in the beta so far, the questing does very much follow that Pandaria feeling.
Okay.
With a few slight changes that I think are hopefully for the better. I'll have to put more time in the beta to kind of really tell you.
Oh, what are you talking about so far?
Well, okay. What I'm talking about is did Pandaria hit the sweet spot for that combination of storytelling? Is it the right choice that Blizzard is making to take that to the next iteration, or should they have kept it the way it is? Draenor takes that to the next iteration in terms of how the questing goes.
Okay.
And it's kind of, you know, it is conceivable that that could be too much. I'm not saying that I think that it is. I'm just saying, like, I could see where it could maybe be possibly. So there is that. I don't think it's going to be an issue. The questing seems pretty cool. Like, okay, when you go through the portal, you definitely get this feeling of chaos, almost to the point where you don't know what the fuck is going on or where to go or what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a cool thing in the sense that it helps build the immersion, because you definitely get that you're on a battlefield feeling.
Yes.
You know, you run through the NPCs as they're fighting, and half the time you can't really stop to say, is this a player? Is this another person? What the fuck's going on here? Oh, well, they want me to go do this. Okay, well, where do I go? Oh, my God, there's all this weird shit happening everywhere.
Yeah.
And you very much get that, you know, wandering on the beachhead looking for your own arm feeling. And that's pretty cool, I think. Now, I could see where that would turn off some people, but I personally like it. I think it builds immersion.
Mm-hmm.
I think the actual portal itself looks really cool. They did a good job. As you go up to the portal, you very much get this feeling of foreboding. Atmospherically, it's great. So questing wise, it's definitely more of it's definitely not a departure from Pandaria. It's more steps in that same direction.
Okay. Okay, now, did you do the quests leading up to the Dark Portal, or did you just go straight to the Dark Portal?
I did not. I did not do the quests leading up to the portal because, frankly, I've seen them already. I've seen them played, and I feel that if I play through them myself, I'm going to kind of burn myself out on them for when they actually go live.
Okay.
I know what they consist of. I think they're kind of mediocre.
I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to that whole repelling the invasion feel.
Well, it didn't really. The thing is, now, I will actually go ahead and play through them then, because I want to see where that's coming from, if that's a subjective thing or if I missed something. Because I personally, it just seemed like more fetch quests and kill this and kill that quest to me.
Mm-hmm.
It did not have that had more of a pre-Pandaria quest feeling to me. When I was watching it done on some of the streams that I've watched, the quests were more like, oh, hey, go poison these ogres by putting shit in their stew. Oh, hey, go to Nethergard and kill some bitches. Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, go do this, go do that, go kill, you know, let's decimate the Iron Horde by killing five of these and five of those, and surely their front lines will shatter if you do that. And none of them seemed to really be all that epic leading up to the portal. It just seemed kind of like mundane, same old quests. Mm-hmm. Now, the actual feeling around the portal itself, where you see all the fucking war machines they've brought through and all this other shit, that's cool as fuck. I love that. But the questing content itself seemed pretty blah.
Mm-hmm.
For that part of it, the pre-portal shit.
All right. Next thing I want to ask you about are the character models.
That's really interesting, because it's like, you know, I had seen the human character model. Well, I've seen most of them as they've shown them on MMO Champion. It's definitely not the same as actually seeing them in person in game.
Okay, how so?
Well, I think the most stark example is when I seen my own character after the transformation. Because, like, when you go into the beta, you can copy your own character
mm-hmm.
to see, you know, what they're going to look like with the new character model. So, you know, that's what I did. I mean, you can make a pre-made 90 to go and quest on, but I wanted to see my character as he would appear in Draenor.
Mm.
And it was really weird. Like, I don't dislike it.
Okay.
But I can't say I actually am stoked about it either.
Why is that?
I don't know. I really don't. I can't put my finger on it. I really can't quantify it or explain it. And like, I would like the ability to redesign it now.
You would like, well, so you think that they should give us all a free character recustomization option?
I do. I do. Not because I think the new model's bad. I really don't. I'm not saying, oh my god, you ruined my character. I'm not saying anything of the sort. I'm not displeased with the final result. What I'm saying is, okay, well now that this is what it looks like, you know, like, okay, my character, for example, the reason why he has facial hair mm-hmm. is because it covered up the bottom part of his face.
Yeah, the human faces are kind of derpy.
And, you know, that's why he had the facial hair, because, like, the nose and the upper lip looked really weird to me, and I wanted something that would cover that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to go back, and now that they have the new faces and shit, which I've looked at my character clean shaven, and it looks weird, and just like, oh, wow, you're not used to seeing that kind of a way.
Yeah.
But I would like to go back and see if I can play with the facial options and reconfigure those a little bit and get something, you know, that I like a little bit better now that the models don't look like ass.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they should give a free character customization out for that reason, not because, you know, Blizzard had said, well, we're not going to do that because we want you to be happy with the transformation or with the changes and not feel like you need to. Yeah, Blizz, but you don't get it. It's because we're happy with it that we may want to. We may want to explore different options and see what else we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of almost where I'm at with this. Like, the difference is – now, one thing I'll say, like, the hairstyle for my tune, it doesn't seem to have changed any. They don't seem to have enhanced that at all.
Mm.
Or maybe it's just me. It looks like it's, like, the new model with, like, old hair polygons. And
that could just be a fact that it's a beta.
It could be, or it could be that they haven't applied it to the styles that you get from the barbershop, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Or maybe it's just me nitpicking, or maybe it's something that I just have to get used to. I don't know. But I would need to go back and look at it and play with that some more to see. So far, I will say, and I did go when I looked at all the other character models, I will say one thing, that the human male running animation has been vastly improved.
No longer looks like he's got a butt plug.
Yeah. It's a lot better now. Yes.
Well, that's good.
I tell you, the one model that's really stood out to me when I've gone in and looked at it is the Torin.
Really?
Yeah, it is really awesome. I really liked it.
Well, I mean, I kind of had high hopes for the Torin because they've kind of, in both Lich King and then in Pandaria, they introduced Torin offshoot races. The Tatanka, I think, and then the
Yongloids.
The Yongles. So, yeah. It was kind of like, well, I kind of like these updated Torins better than the Torins that they released during Vanilla. So when they said that, oh, we're going to redo the vanilla races, I was like, oh, okay, so then we're going to get the same kind of cool look that these newer Torin offshoots have applied to the Torin themselves. So I'm really glad to hear that it all worked out, that it actually does look really good.
Yeah, the new Torin model actually, to me, I think is the best improvement, the biggest improvement, the most stark contrast,
mm-hmm.
and among the better final products. It looks really cool. I like it.
You know, it's really, really good. I'm glad to hear that. I am glad to hear that. I guess my next question is...
I have not gotten to Garrison's.
You have not gotten to Garrison's. How far have you gotten to?
I'm still at the just through the portal quests.
Okay, so have you freed Gul'dan yet?
I have not, because last night I was having internet issues. I kept lagging really bad, and I don't think it was because of the game performance necessarily, though I was right now. If you have a system right now that you're playing Pandaria on and you're getting mediocre graphic performance on, like, say, fair settings on the slider bar, be prepared to put it down to low to get the same level of performance.
Mm-hmm.
It is graphically more intensive. It does strain older systems like mine. And, you know, investment in a new video card is not out of the question.
Okay. Okay, well, I think we all figure that. The WoW updates usually do take their toll. But, and of course, the new character models, new polygons coming into play, it was always, you know, I think we all kind of expected that this was going to, you know, force some upgrades on the video card front. I guess, okay, my next question, you haven't been to Garrison's yet, you're still at the Dark Portal. What do you think in terms of, you said it's very kind of chaotic when you go over, when you go through the Dark Portal.
Yes.
What's the, do you really get the sense that it's a one-way mission? Because they made a big deal about, like, this is a one-way mission.
It's funny. It's funny, actually. Before you click to go through the portal, they really drive that home in the sense that you even get a pop-up on your screen. And it says, you are about to go through the portal, and you may not be able to immediately return. Do you still wish to go? And you have to click yes to go through. I thought that was kind of funny. Like, damn, they be serious about this shit, yo.
Well, in a Q&A that they did, a live Q&A, which, that's funny.
I need to see that. I haven't watched that yet.
It's actually pretty good. They don't respond to the chat at all.
I didn't think they would because they'd be like, why is Chris Metzen such a faggot? Well, he's, you know.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much, no. So they didn't respond to the chat. But they did say that the original concept they had was that you'd go over to Draenor and, like, you wouldn't have a way back. Like, they were going to keep you in Draenor the entire expansion. And that was the original plan. And then they said, like, that changed because they realized that was not viable. Like, even if they gave you all the amenities like transmog and auction house and bank in Draenor, like, people would still be pissed that they couldn't go back to Stormwind or Orgrimmar.
Yeah.
So they, you know, they changed that. So now it's more like, oh, well, you just get a portal and you can just, like, pop back and forth whenever you want. But the original plan was they were going to keep you there the entire expansion and then, like, really make coming back to Azeroth special at the end of it.
See, I think they should have done that. I really do. I mean, okay, here's my thing, and I think when we discussed this the other day, you were kind of like, oh my god, that was crazy that they would even consider that.
Mm-hmm.
But think about it for the same reasons that we're happy that they're not allowing flying.
No, I get that. I get that. It would give you a sense of exploration, but I think cutting people off from the main world, especially the main capitals, for too long would be a potential mistake.
Like, maybe I don't mean like the entire expansion. I mean maybe like a patch or two. Like, you know, 6.1. You know, until 6.1 we're stuck in Draenor.
Or maybe have it like Khadgar, because Khadgar is the one making all these portals.
Right.
Maybe have Khadgar be like, I can make a portal, because it's not just time travel, it's like apparently alternate timeline jumping, so it's you know, you'd be like, I can get a portal back to Azeroth, but it's gonna take a while, so, you can go back to, I can make one portal to Azeroth like a week. And so you can go back like once a week or something, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing is, I can see where people would not want it, and where it would even inconvenience me, like, you know, because you and I like to go run the old content and shit like that.
Yeah, how are we not going to get your Hammer of the Nauru if we're stuck on Draenor?
I know, right? Then I can, my god, I'd just be fucked in a different location. But they're introducing a new model of that. It's going to be back in game, so.
Well, it's still in game, but.
Well, yeah, but there's an updated model for Draenor that you showed me.
Yeah, which means
I tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to get that new model, and then I'm going to end up getting the one out of.
You're going to get the new model, Flare. But like the new model is going to be one that you get for like delivering pie to someone or something.
Probably.
It'll be like a bitch quest reward.
But I think it would have been really cool to add that extra bit of immersion to the storyline. If they had just delayed going back in for a bit and like, you know, and that's also why they have the auction house and all this other shit in your garrison that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and that's probably a holdover from that. So I think, I don't think that would be such a bad idea, a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people would have bitched, oh my God, I'm unsubscribing and all this other shit. I don't think it'd be that bad. I think it'd be kind of cool to at least try it for a few weeks.
Yeah. I just don't, like, at the end of the day, I just don't see it as viable. Like, too many people would have complained. Too many people, like you said, it would have made it impossible for people to run older content on their high level tunes. It would have been, I think it would have, I think it's a cool idea, definitely, but I think it would have caused more problems than it would have solved, or would have caused more problems that would have outweighed the benefits that it brought. Like, I think it's just easier to put the portals there that are easily accessible and be like, if you want to go back, you can go back easily enough. But hey, you know what? If you want to do this whole stuck on Draenor thing, then you can just avoid the portals if you want to. So, like, I don't know. That's just kind of the feeling I got from it. Like, I don't think it'll be, I don't think it would have been viable.
Maybe you're right. I still, I don't know. I think it would have been cool to at least try it, but yeah, I mean, you're probably right. Just the amount of bitching probably would have made them be like, okay, fine. Look, here's your fucking portal. At the very least though, make getting back feel important. Have some kind of in-game thing where, you know, add some quest after your initial shit at the Dark Portal. You know, Khadgar says, hey, you know, it turns out there may actually be a way we can get back and be able to bring in more forces or some shit. And then, you know, you go and do this quest line, not anything necessarily all that long or engage or, you know, difficult, just something that feels really immersive and very weighty that you get to go do to get that portal back.
Mm-hmm. Now, you haven't gotten to garrisons yet, but you still had something you wanted to say on the topic of Garrison. So this is in true WoW player fashion, because he's not waiting to play it like a sheeple.
No, I'm not sheeple. And it's not so much me saying, oh my God, this is horrible. They're fucking it up. They're doing it wrong. I'm saying I have a concern.
Mm-hmm.
And that concern is that potentially they're making the garrisons a bit too integral to your progression experience in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's going to be those players, and this is almost the same thing, kind of like what you're saying about the not having the portal back. And I'm just being a hypocrite and choosing this on a different gripe. But it feels like they're making it too much of something that you have to do, instead of something that's just cool that you can do that's fun.
Yeah. I kind of get that. I get that, but at the same time, I'm really not surprised because,
wind physics.
Yeah, wind physics, basically. I mean, you look at, they introduced wind physics in Mists of Pandaria. And how many boss fights do they integrate that into? I mean, goddamn.
All of them.
I don't think it was in the garage one. I don't think the wind physics was in Garrosh, but they introduced it pretty much everywhere else. So, you know, Blizzard gets a new toy, and they want to really drive home how awesome it is, so they're going to make you use it all the time. And I think that's what we see here. And I'm not surprised at all, because, again, in that Q&A, they mentioned that, you know, player housing, which is kind of what garrisons are, player housing is something that every other MMO has had. WoW has always been the outlier in that it never had it. And they said that when they did it, they didn't want to just do what everyone else had done, and that they wanted to make it feel unique, and they wanted to make it feel special and necessary. So that's kind of what's happening here. And they introduce player housing, and in their mind, the way to make player housing work is to make it essential to the leveling process. And so I'm not surprised that it feels that way at all.
I'm not either. I just really would have wished that that they had done it a bit differently. I don't know. I mean, if you make it compelling enough, people will do it anyways because they want to, not because they have to. And this is also for the hardcore players, the hardcore Raiders and shit, of which, for the record, Mike and I are not. But I can get where they're coming from when they say, hey, you know, this is extra shit that I've got to do to stay competitive. And this takes a lot of time out of my nights to do this, just to be able to raid on the nights when I'm not doing this shit. I almost kind of feel like it could potentially be, and I'm not saying it is, I'm saying it has the potential to be another issue like World of Daily Craft at the beginning of Pandaria.
Well, they said that they wanted to avoid that. They kind of admitted that all the daily quests at the end of Pandaria were a mistake. And they were trying to find ways to kind of do that same kind of thing without making it feel repetitive. And that this is going to play into that. I guess my big concern is that as soon as Draenor is done, your garrison's going to be pointless.
Yeah, it is. And Blizzard's already said that.
Like, when Draenor's over, you know, your garrison, it's not going to factor into anything at all. And that's kind of what bugs me, because the idea of player housing is customization. So basically, you've got a situation whereby customization, you're trying to get players to engage in customization, and then they will, and they're going to put a lot of time into customizing their garrison, and they're going to get real proud of it, and then it's going to be pointless. And I don't know if that's the best idea. Honestly, in my opinion, I think Blizzard overthought the problem. And Blizzard's whole, we didn't want to be like every other MMO and do player housing like everyone else. Like, shut the fuck up and just do player housing like everyone wanted it. Like, it seems that they made the problem, they saw a problem that wasn't really there, and in trying to address it, they created a new problem. Which is, they wanted to make player housing feel essential to the questing content, but they didn't realize that that means that when that questing content becomes outdated, so does the player housing. And I honestly think long term it would have been a better choice to just fucking have standard player housing, or maybe put your garrison in like the old world in Azeroth and have it be an option where, like, if you want to do the garrison stuff, you can devote the time to do it. But it wouldn't affect your leveling path on Draenor.
Yeah. And that would be pretty cool if they had done that. I wish they would have. I still think they might at some point. What they've said was, this is going to be like the farm on Pandaria. In the sense that
no one's going to care after it's over.
Right, but also in the sense that they're going to take what they learned from this and they're going to expand on it in the next expansion. So, you know, we don't know that this won't actually eventually happen.
Yes, I know, but I don't know. It seems problematic to me to give players this customizable sandbox of a feature like garrisons. And then say, well, it's going to be completely useless as soon as we're done with Draenor. And that's going to come sooner than you think, because they've been talking a lot about getting expansions out quicker and sooner. So it would not surprise me if Draenor has a shorter shelf life than Pandaria or Cataclysm had. And if that's the case, I don't know, man. You're asking people to really invest in this idea of customization, and then you're going to basically render it obsolete. And, like, the only end game I see where this works is if there is going to eventually be some sort of customizable player housing option in the old world. And that's why you put it in the old world, because the old world never kind of goes out of date. Like, they always add new things for expansions, but everyone right. always comes back to the old world. That's always where everyone's kind of bases themselves out of. So, if the end result is we're going to take what we learned in the farm, and we're going to take what we learned in the garrison, and we're going to give you proper player housing after Draenor in the old world that's never really going to become obsolete or outdated, then I'm fine with it. But it kind of seems like a shitty move to be like, you could customize your garrison and do all this neat stuff, and oh, by the way, it's useless.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. And I agree with you to a point. In fact, I mean, I do agree with you completely. I'm just kind of not as arsed to be upset about it, I guess, besides the fact that, you know, would I rather them have permanent actual personal or guild, better yet, guild hall housing? Yeah, I mean, I'd much rather have that. Do I think that they're kind of trying their own thing with it and, you know, we'll see what happens. Yeah, that's what's going to end up happening, and hopefully they'll go more in the direction that we want afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who knows? Maybe, you know, it could be such that the people enjoy the garrison so much they get all butt hurt and like, no, we want to keep them, because this is a lot more integral to the game than the farm was.
Mm-hmm.
The farm was just, oh, hey, if you want reputation with these pretentious farmer asshole pandas, you get to go do this shit on this fucking farm. This is a lot more important in the gameplay and in the story than that farm was.
We are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by.
Unruffled by that minor setback, we try phase two.
All right, and we're back. Sorry about that. Yeah, there's going to be a quick edit there. But yeah. So, we are back talking about garrisons. And as I was saying, you were saying that you really couldn't bring yourself to be all that upset about, this customizable thing being taken away at the end of Draenor and all
well,
that.
Well, that also because, I mean, the garrison itself isn't even as customizable as I would like for it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that's been due to time constraints, and they're going to try to add more through the expansion. So, that being said, you know, we'll see what they add to it from here, but as it stands now, it's not nearly as customizable enough as I would like for it to be. But if they add enough to it and people end up spending enough time in it, who knows, maybe the pressure from the fan base on Blizzard will be such that they make somehow work it into the next expansion. I wouldn't think that'd be entirely out of the question, seeing as how they've said that even part of Draenor itself, Faerûn or what the hell ever it's called,
mm-hmm.
May not be available until, you know, the next expansion.
Mm. Indeed. I'm kind of curious to see what they got planned, because it all seems very, 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 very interesting what their next few expansions are going to be. A lot of people are suggesting that we might have more than one expansion on this alternate Draenor. And so how they manage to do that will, you know, again, be very interesting. One of the customization options that I do like is that you will be allowed to change the guards in accordance with the factions of your faction that you are exalted with. So each side, Alliance and Horde, has six factions, the six races, more or less. And you can gain reputation with all of them, and if you are exalted with one of them, then you can get those guards for your garrison. So, you start off with standard human guards from Stormwind, but if you want Draenei guards, then you get exalted with Exodor, the Draenei faction, and then you get Draenei guards. If you're on Horde and you want something other than Orc guards, maybe you get exalted with Thunderbluff and you get Tauren guards. So I do like that. And then they're adding something in where if you're a Death Knight and you're exalted with the Knights of the Ebon Blade, the neutral Death Knight organization, then you can get Death Knight guards.
Yeah.
So I like that. That's a great example of customization that I'd like to see them build off of that. I'd like to see more class-specific ones, too. Like, if you're a paladin and you're Exalter of the Argent Crusade, you should be able to get Argent Crusade guards. If you're a shaman and you're Exalter of the Earthen Ring, you should get Earthen Ring guards. If you're a druid and you're Exalter of the Cenarian Circle, you should get Cenarian Circle guards.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a mage, if you're an alliance mage, maybe you can get Kirin Tor guards. And if you're a horde mage, maybe you can get Sunreaver guards, that sort of thing. So, you know, there are that's opened up a lot of options. Using the reputation system as sort of a way to further customize the garrison is something I'd like to see. I'm excited about it. It's actually one of the things that made me more excited about it, because I'm like, finally, this is something that seems like true customization. Because all the buildings kind of share the similar aesthetic, so it's like, oh, well, you can choose between a town hall or, like, a lumber mill, but it all kind of looks the same. Well, now this is adding another dimension to it that I think is just enough to get me interested in, and I'm curious to see where they build off of this going forward.
Yeah, it definitely shows that they're approaching it from a kind of a unique standpoint. I think the reputation idea is pretty clever, actually. Mm-hmm. We'll see what they do with it. Maybe they'll think of ways to it would be nice if they could actually design assets to where that impacts the kind of buildings you have, too.
So,
For
example, say if you're a Death Knight, you have more, like, Death Knight-y, Scourge-based architecture.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you're a Paladin, you get a statue of Tyrion Fordring.
Fuck you.
Oh, that would be great. But yeah, I mean, I kind of like where that's going, but at the same time, it's a kind of a double thing, because on one hand, I'm like, this could be the start of some really neat customization options. But it won't matter
come next expansion.
But on the other hand, like, do I really want to invest all this time in, like, customizing something that I really like if it's going to be completely pointless? And again, that's why I think they just should have gone with standard player housing, because, you know what, Blizzard, yeah, you just be doing what everyone else is doing, but everyone else does it the same way for, you know, maybe a good reason. And if you had just done player housing or even a player garrison in the old world, then you wouldn't have this feeling of, oh, it's going to become pointless. So I understand why they did it the way they did. I just think that they overthought a problem that really wasn't there.
I agree. But, you know, we'll see what they do with it. It's a bit soon to say for sure exactly what they're going to do. Maybe their minds will change.
Indeed. Maybe they will. But with that, I think we're going to draw episode 31 to a close, basically a geek show. You know what? This has been this is fun. I hope we get more from your side of the beta. So, you know, get to the beta. I want to drill you for more information.
I'm actually in it right now.
I also want to see if you play as a Worgen, if the human form for the Worgen will use the updated human models. That's also something I've been curious about.
Let me, actually, if you don't care,
yeah,
wait a minute, I can check it.
Yeah, okay.
I gotta wait 20 seconds to log out because that's a fucking thing you gotta do.
You know, Bags audience, you are with us on the journey of discovery.
Waiting. God damn it, come on. 3, 2, 1. Alright. Character list. Create character. Worgen.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, he's in Worgen mode right now. How do I get him over to human?
I don't know what the new character select screen looks like. I know on the one for Pandaria, there's like a little button in the top left-hand corner that you can switch between human and Worgen form. I don't know what this one looks like, though. So.
Okay, here we go. Yes.
He uses the updated human model?
Yes.
Fantastic. I was afraid that they'd use the old human model and they wouldn't, because they said they weren't updating the Worgens, and I'm like, if they're not going to update the werewolf form, you know, that's fine, because it's newer stuff, so it doesn't look as dated. but I was afraid that they'd leave the old human models. So I'm glad to see that they're using the new human models.
It is indeed the new human model for the Worgen. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Indeed. Awesomeness. So with that, we end basically a Geek Show 31 on a very positive note for Mike. You know, we'll probably have some more beta updates on Warlords of Draenor going forward as Jack discovers more things. But, on that note, signing off, you can catch us on all of our platforms, Speaker, Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, catch us at forum.taishu.org, sportslogos.net, TFW2005, on Twitter at AGeekShow. You can catch us, send us an email at basicallyageekshow@gmail.com. All that good stuff. Episode 31, signing off. For Jack, this is Mike.
Night, everybody.
Try again.